pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning, broadcasting at the State House here. Third hour now underway. Joining us now here in the, what do we call it, conference room in the House Majority Leader's suite is State Senator Lance Bell. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm kind of scared. Having to follow Chris Elliott, I'm not sure if it's a good time to come in or not.
We'll get you coached up here, Senator. Sorry, I didn't hit the right button there. Hey, we were talking about this kind of off air, but your district, you got Talladega nearby, right?
Absolutely. Phenomenal racing, huge economic impact for the state of Alabama.
Yes, it's a cool thing, and what, you know, there it is. Right. I mean, it seems like it's fallen off a little, but it's still a big draw.
Some of the other areas may have fallen off. Talladega, it's incredible the amount of people there. I think the last two races, we've had not a sellout, but very close to a sellout on the stands. Everything else has pretty much been sold out. But between 22 and 27 other countries are coming to Talladega.
Well, that's the thing.
They sell all 50 states. It's the experience.
You don't see a lot of Alabama. You see Alabama tags. You see a lot of out-of-state plays.
Yes, but all 50 states and between 22 and 27 countries are where tickets are mailed to or are electronically sent now.
Right. They technology. Don't get the ticket anymore.
So it's a huge economic impact. The hotels, the restaurants, the Walmarts, the convenience stores. It's amazing what the tax is that comes off all that.
As we were talking about it, like there was a time when, you know, they didn't get the big economic incentive breaks, you know, and now I guess the states kind of realized the value there in that.
Yes. And the state's done a little bit better job, but when Bill France built the place, they didn't need it. They had a hard sellout for all those years. And they never needed anything. They actually give to the state and never ask for anything in return, and did that up to, you know, pretty much from 1969 until recently. And then they still, in the grand scheme of things, give so much more back to the state than you can imagine.
The way it was explained to me was when Bill France was negotiating building the track, they were going to build it somewhere else. But Governor Wallace at the time brokered the deal, and they built a big, I guess I-20 makes a big curve just so it goes by where that location was so they could build the track right by Interstate 20, that this was all part of the deal that George Wallace negotiated with Bill France at the time.
Fortunately, I was not around then. I'm a little young
for that. Isn't that kind of amazing the way that all came together?
Yes,
though,
but it's a beautiful facility, and what people also don't realize, our state troopers train up there. If you go to be a trooper, you spend a week up there. Every class goes up there, and that's where they do their pursuit driving and all that. And Talladega don't charge a penny for any of that. It's so much that Talladega gives back to the community that people don't realize, and I'm very fortunate to live in that district.
Well, it's a cool – I could go on and talk about NASCAR, but I didn't make a Mobile audience probably be like, hey,
you had a little racing down Mobile area too.
We did. We went to a monster truck rally last weekend at the Mobile track last week. I got a Five Flags, so I find that to be in Pensacola where they do the snowball derby. Mm-hmm. But we go to Talladega at least once, one of the two races a year, and then maybe try to work in a race somewhere. I went to Richmond, took my four-year-old to Richmond.
You need to go to Darlington.
I've been to every track, to a NASCAR race at every track except some of the new ones. Now, they've done away with, like, they don't race in Kentucky anymore. But I had been to, like, a race at Darlington, a race at Rockingham.
Just so old school. I want to hit the Bowman Gray.
I'd love to go there. You know, some of these places that they had just wound down north of Wilkesboro when I started following it. But it still doesn't have the appeal. But that's a discussion for another time. Senator, well, how's the session going for you so far?
Learning a lot, my session, and still got a lot to learn. And I don't mind asking questions and kind of go from there. So,
well, it's the third session. That's not chump change there. I mean, you've been through a couple of these sessions already, and As the you haven't got the mold lung yet, have you?
No, that's bad. When you know, I first come in, one of the assistants said, "So how are your lungs?" And I'm like, "Fine." I was somebody said, "Oh no, you keep working in this building, you'll have issues at some point." And there was a shock. And then one of the other centers showed me his air vent in his office, and it's covered in mold, and that was eye opening. It's embarrassing.
I don't think many people are going to miss this building when it's all said and done. There's no nostalgia here, right?
Correct.
We're joined by State Senator Lance Bell here on the program. Policy-wise, you know, the one that we talked a lot about, you got the tour, you've seen it, but making moves on immigration, doing an immigration bill, an immigration package of bills, how's that going? What do you think?
It's going good. You know, we're lucky because there was a lot more bills we were looking at, a lot of other things that we were looking at the state having to do. But when President Trump got elected, we could back off a lot of that because he's going to correct a lot of it. I went May of 23 to the border and then went back this last year. I think it was September. And it's a wide open. I mean, it was amazing. But what scared me more than anything is the Chinese males coming across, not families, Chinese males in their 30s. And they're all going to upstate New York and California. And that's what the Border Patrol would tell us in Homeland Security. We're sending memo after memo after memo up. This ain't right. Something's wrong here. When that many are crossing the border unchecked and going somewhere. But also, I think the one thing that really made me mad is these charities that operate down there. They should be charged criminally. They're not a charity. Some of the things they were doing is human trafficking, money laundering, and it was really sad.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, we got some of these charities that operate in the state, I believe, that are, you know, they would say they're aiding immigrant, you know, they're out of Christian charity, but like I said, it's aiding and abetting something that's illegal.
They would go across the border with an iPad and help sign these people up on the CBP1 app, which now, thank goodness President Trump's done away with that app. But they would sign them up on that, charge them $2,500. When they come across the border, they would have their number because that charity has sent somebody over there to do that. They would come back, then they would come across the border, go through that process, get their $5,000 government-issued card, go over to the charity. And the charity had, when you walk in, there's a bar. But instead of bourbons and vodkas and stuff of that nature, it was toothbrush, toothpaste, diapers. It was necessities you need. Well, the people would stay at that charity for a couple of days. The charity also had three hotels fully rented. Well, they charged you for all that. Well, by the time you left that charity, they had all your money. That $5,000 was gone. And that charity that last year got $17 million from the federal government to do what they're doing. Well, they're double dipping. When the lady running the charity is driving a very expensive BMW and living a lifestyle that is way beyond what we could live, we got problems there. That's money laundering.
Running a charity, right?
Yes, running a charity and taking our federal tax dollars on top of what she was taking off of everybody else, and they call it because it was a charity.
Well, is there something the state can do to, I mean, obviously we learned from HB 56 that the state has some issues enforcing immigration law, but is there something you could do to, like, you know, you still got to have licenses and there's things you got to do that require services from the state of Alabama that you could do to, like, stymie, make it a little more difficult to be an illegal immigrant in Alabama?
You know, the bad part is we've got people that have been here a long time that work every day that are technically illegal, work every day. We've got to figure out a process that they would have to go back to their home country and then spend a lot of money in order to come back the legal way. And technically that's what you got to do, but we've got to figure a way, a process for some of those people that are tax paying here, that are paying taxes, they're filing their income tax, but technically they're illegal. I represented in a case, it's probably been 10 years ago now, and the individual had several business licenses, had an ABC license, had a $2.1 million loan from a local bank for his business. Did not realize till we're in the case he was actually illegal. But he was doing everything the right way except for his citizenship. And I don't know the answer to it.
If you're not a citizen, like, you still get Social Security numbers and all the things you need to operate a business in America?
He had every bit of that. That was my opening experience of how do you...
What's the point of the system, right?
We've got a broken system. So it needs a complete overhaul from the beginning.
Well, there's an economic component to this, Senator, and I don't know, you know, in this state, how much we're relying upon these illegal immigrants, but it is driving down wages. It's artificially supplying the labor through an illegal means. And people don't, their jobs Americans won't do, but I've always thought, well, if you just pay them enough, right, whatever, name the price, I'll go do it. You know, yeah, you don't have to, if you want me to go hang chickens, it's going to cost you, but I'll go do it. And that's what we got to find. But when you bring in the illegal labor, it devalues that labor, which is not great labor. It devalues the labor. But it doesn't just do that. It devalues all the other jobs that may be competing with that job, you know. So, for example, if you're, you know, an employee at like a big box store, well, you can make $17 an hour and working there, you can make $19 an hour hanging chickens. But if that price goes down with the processing plant, it's not going to make the big box store want to pay more to get better people. So there's like a... there's an economic component here, but what I'm not sure about is, like, if we really do go forward to start cracking down on illegal labor, does it look like, does the state suffer from a workforce standpoint?
Great question. I don't know I just don't know the answer to it. There's got to be a happy medium there somewhere.
Yeah, because that's what you hear from, you know, when they did it in 2011, the backlash was farmers and not being able to, you know, but the thing about ag jobs is that they're seasonal. They're 3 months or 4 months.
But they're coming over here through the proper process.
Right.
Up in my county, we have tomato farms up in Steele, but they're coming through here for a farm process. They have the paperwork. They're here legally in the United States through that process. They're not citizens here, but there's a process for them to come and work the farms and
pay
do
taxes,
that, and pay the taxes, you know, and do all that. The farmers couldn't do without them.
Yeah, because no one's going to take a job picking tomatoes that's only going to be around for a very, very short period of time. They're not going to go quit their job and then go do this for no matter what they pay. And then when that job's over, go back to work. I mean, that's just not a sustainable system. So I get it. You got to have some kind of migrant labor. But some of these manufacturing jobs, I feel like you're just abusing the system.
No doubt. No doubt at all.
Yeah. Next question, and we just got a minute or two here left. The package of bills, with dealing with some of the crime stuff, does that feel like that passes muster with you?
I think most of it does. We're still working on a couple of them. There'll be some amendments, but we're working with all the parties involved and get it figured out. Kind of go from there. And there's, you know, as always, a happy medium somewhere. And that's the process I'm learning here. I come in.
Well, you're not going to go take over, I mean, the municipalities, police department, states. You know, I don't know how that would even work, right?
Well, it still don't matter what we pass. It starts at home. And if parents don't start raising their kids right, they're going to end up in prison, and that's what's happening.
This is the root of it, right?
It is.
It is the root,
and nobody wants to talk about that.
You could talk about the education score, the test scores, and everything. There's a cultural problem with all of that there's not necessarily a government solution for.
Correct. There's no way to solve what's happening in the homes. Mamas and daddies are sending their kids to school to be a babysitting service. They don't care if kids get an education. They don't provide any positive influence for their kid. They're out on drugs. They're out doing stuff themselves. Kids are raising themselves, and we're at a point in life. What do we expect? What do we expect those kids to do? How do we solve that? And I don't know the answer to that, but until we solve that problem, we're just going to continue filling the prisons up. And look, if you're doing violent crime and doing that, you belong in prison. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Well, that's to be continued. Senator, I'll let you get back to the business of the state, but thanks for stopping
Thank
by
you.
This morning.
Appreciate it.
State Senator Lance Bell there. We're going to get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant.